Is my, can you guys hear me now? Okay, calling to order the Iron County Coordinated Council of Governments meeting. We gotta start with RTEC, do we?
RTEC.
So we're starting with RTEC, right?
Yeah.
Okay, actually calling to order our RTEC meeting. It is, we're a little late, so we appreciate those who are here and waited and those who just got here. It's 1:27 PM. Welcome. So we need to approve the minutes from, so do you have both agendas? Because I just have one. I can share that one. Okay. We need to approve the minutes from March 4th.
Make a motion to approve the minutes from March 4th.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Was that Allred and?
Callaway. All right. And item number three is RPO funding renewal for fiscal year 2027. And this is an action item by Nate Weiberg.
All right. Thank you. So annually, to continue administration of this program, we ask, we go through the process to get the funding for this. And the RTAC favorably recommended to this board approval for the FY 2027 funding in the amount of $50,000 from the Corridor Preservation Fund for five county AOG to administer the RPO. This request is not an increase from last year, and it hasn't been increased in several years, so we've asked to keep it the same. And we will also be reaching out to UDOT for an additional $10,000 match to help out with the program.
UDOT has approved the $10,000 match.
UDOT has approved it already?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So we just need to give an agreement signed.
Okay, thank you. Just a quick, with the handout that looks like this, this letter is also the agreement for that, and we will get it signed after if it gets approved. But the to go over what's in here is those amounts, and that the RPO provides organized local input into statewide and regional transportation planning efforts. And RPO coordination provides leverage for local projects on statewide plans. And on the second and third page of this letter are a demonstration of the last 5 years of state-funded projects in Iron County, so you all can see what help that this coordination provides. Also, we do more than just coordinating the meeting, bringing you all together and to talk about the projects and make decisions. But also we assist, I assist UDOT with the Iron County Travel Demand Model, which the RPO has a contract with UDOT to do so. We also do the expo coordination. We participate in transportation studies when we are invited to do so. We attend UDOT STIP meetings. We coordinate with UDOT Region 4 staff. Chris is here also with UDOT Central Planning staff on the UDOT Long Range Plan. We manage the RPO Long Range Plan and the Corridor Preservation Priority List. We also provide transportation planning related assistance when needed. So if somebody from this body or the RTAC comes to me and says, hey, can you help out with X, Y, and Z transportation matter, then I'm available to do that, to assist with that. Some of the things we've done in the past, we've helped write the SS4A planning grant, and we also helped write a CIB grant for the interconnectivity study between Enoch and Cedar, Five County. So I'm going to speak for my organization too, Five County. We've really appreciated working and enjoy coming and working with Iron County. It's a pleasure, and we'd love to continue this working relationship. And so, the request is to approve the funding or to recommend the funding to COG.
All right. So, do we have any discussion on this, or are we ready to make a motion?
talked about this a bit. So I would make a motion that we approve the...
Do I need to say the amounts? Or just
you can reference the letter or what the discussion we had.
Yeah, I make a motion that we approve the agreement with for five county governments to run the RPO.
I'll second the motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, that motion carries. Thank you. We look forward to working, continuing to work with you. I just realized I need to introduce, or people on the phone or on the Zoom need to introduce themselves, and also we could start with legislative update, especially because you guys have been waiting. So we'll start with Carl Albrecht, and do you want to introduce yourself, and you can launch us off on legislative update?
Yeah, thank you for allowing me to do this online. I'm in Idaho, Idaho Falls, watching my granddaughter play state softball. So it's good to be with you. I think the last time, am I the only legislator that's on today?
Looks like it.
Yes. And we're working on the volume here. Carl, hang on a second.
Let me see if, does this room have an internal...
It does. It's tied into that computer you're on. I don't know how to switch it over. I think you have to switch. Actually, I do know how to
try speaking now.
I'm going to say, don't you own this building?
No, it didn't switch.
Speak down on the one above it where it says echo. Go down the speakers. Try the one. Go up.
No, right there. Extron. Try now.
Can you hear me now?
And if not, do the one below it. Do that good right there.
This one here?
And then turn the volume up.
It's all the way up.
Oh, no, it's not doing
okay, try one more time. Like, speak.
Oh, it is. You're right. Okay, go back.
All right, so it's going to be that to top one.
Okay.
Here, I got a plan, though.
We good?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. I think the last time I talked to you, we had some discussion about HB 48, the wildfire map, and the WUI maps. Just so you all know, that was put on hold for another year so we can get the maps right.
Thank the Lord.
Yeah, thank the Lord.
So they are going to update the maps?
Yeah, they're going to update the maps. They're working on that now. It was a disaster, the beginning of those maps, and there were a few of us in the legislature and the Natural Resource Committee that said, hey, You gotta do better than this. This is driving these counties and these cities crazy, and we're getting all kinds of complaints. So we just put it off for a year. So I just wanted you to be aware of that.
That's great.
The other thing I wanted to mention, I think I've mentioned this to you before, and I mentioned it down at the UAC meeting last week. 84% of the legislators in the state of Utah, House and Senate, come from four counties on the Wasatch Front: Beaver, Davis, Salt Lake, and Utah counties. So you can see we kind of have one hand tied behind our back to begin with. But we work well as rural legislators, and I like to say that we punch above our weight, and we did pretty good in the legislature this year. I mentioned a few RFAs, requests for appropriations, that we got approved in the budget. One was the $4.5 million water reuse thing for Cedar and Enid. I think most of
big
you
deal,
aware of
thank
that.
You.
Yeah, and I got another $4.5 million for Department of Technology Services for cybersecurity. And most of that money is earmarked for rural Utah to train our rural Utah folks on how to protect themselves from cyber attacks. So they'll be getting in touch with you and having training programs throughout rural Utah. We've had some rural communities already get hit and paid ransom and so forth, and it's important that you get trained, because a lot of our people in those positions just really don't have the training that they should have. So another one I got approved was I got Garfield County $900,000 to do some NEPA and legal work on a couple of timber sales that they had approved, so that they can move forward on those. Got a little bit of money for the Rural Business Accelerator Program that Darren Bushman and I started a few years ago. It's not enough, but it'll keep it going for another year, and we'll go back and propose more. It's been very successful for rural businesses to start up and do their businesses online. There were a lot of success stories that were mentioned. I'll just mention two or three bills that I passed that I think are important for the state of Utah. One was the first of its kind in the nation, HB 222, is called Limitations of Actions. And it protects the agricultural folks, it protects power plants, and other entities from these environmental frivolous lawsuits that we've been getting. It's the first of its kind in the nation. I got a lot of folks from liberal organizations that contacted me in liberal newspapers and so forth. They didn't like it. There's two or three other states that are moving forward with the same bill. HB 376, I thought, was an important bill. It created some funding for the Forestry Institute at Utah State to work with the watershed restoration folks. There was some money attached to that as well, almost $2 million, so that we can do more projects on our forest for fire prevention. I think that will be an important bill going forward in helping our national forests. I did pass a nuclear bill to establish a nuclear regulatory office within the Office of Department of Environmental Quality. In the process, they've been working with the feds and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission on that, and hopefully we can get that going and do a lot of that work ourselves. The NRC has been very helpful in the Trump administration and our energy situation. And speaking of energy, we've been fighting IPP now for 3 or 4 years. As you know, they shut it down, was going to tear it down. They passed bills and said, no, you're not going to tear that down. That's the cheapest energy we've got. And now negotiating with IPA, purchasing the plant, some water, and plan. And once we get control of that, then we'll go out and do an RFP for an operator, a buyer of the plant, the facilities. Which, if you do the math, 1,900 megawatts of power at IPP that was going to be destroyed and demolished, and they built 840 megawatts of gas power generation that goes strictly to California, so that would have been a loss of about 1,100 megawatts of power into the grid in the state of Utah. So we're working on that. One of the fun things I did during the session was kill proposed the elimination of the restaurant tax. I know a lot of our rural communities rely on that for different budget items in their communities and their counties. And it was fun to get up and kill that one and talk about rural Utah. I sit on the Natural Resource. I'm the chair of the Natural Resource Committee and also sit on Natural Resources Appropriations. I sit on Public Utilities and Energy. I'm on the Legislative Water Development Commission, Federalism Commission, the newly created Energy Council that's doing a lot of these negotiations with IPP and other energy projects that will be coming into the state. Constitutional Defense Council, I said on that. I'm fairly busy. I just want you folks to know that I appreciate the support I've received in Iron County in the past, and I enjoy working for Rural Utah. I don't serve Garfield County, but I've done quite a bit of work for them and Kane County as well in the past. This will be my last election cycle for a 2-year term. I'm not going to call it good after this 2-year term if I get reelected. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. I thought maybe I'd have some help on here from other legislators. It's been 2 months, so I'm trying to gather my thoughts up here in Idaho Falls.
Well, thank you. You represented us very well in rural, and were very responsive, and the work that you did made a huge difference and impact for us here. So I appreciate you and know what the sacrifice you make, and really how able you are to stay on top of communication. It means a lot, and I feel heard, so thank you. I don't know if anyone else has anything to add to that.
No, I just think thanks, Carl, for all you do. You really look out for rural Utah, and I appreciate that. So.
Well, thank you. Rural Utah, I love my life, and that's where I was born and raised, and continue to look out for it. Appreciate being with you today.
All right, thank you. And we have Barry McLaren from John Curtis's office on as well. Did you want to introduce yourself and let us know anything we need to know?
Sure. Yeah, she said Barry McLaren with Senator John Curtis's office, one of his senior outreach advisors. And Senator Curtis, of course, has been very, very busy. I'm sure you've heard all kinds of things about him in the news, particularly in regard to Iran lately, since he's on the Foreign Relations Committee. And his position, like from the very beginning, has been that the president's actions in Iran have been consistent with the president's legal authority under the War Powers Act of 1973. However, he's also pointed out that same law is clear, and after 60 days, military action either has to wind down or, unless Congress provides some formal authorization. And so he takes this requirement seriously for a couple of reasons. One, the Constitution deliberately provides power to Congress to authorize war. And secondly, the legacy of the Vietnam War serves as a sort of a permanent reminder of the devastation that occurs when lines of authority are sort of blurred or ignored. And we know that there's been this ongoing tension between the executive branch and the Congress in regard to war. But he's been very clear. He's not going to support continued funding for the use of force without Congress weighing in. And so he's been talking with his colleagues in the Senate to try to make sure that Congress is either authorizes authorization of military force, or that even in conjunction with the White House, that we pull out one or the other. But so he's very active in that. He's also, as part of the Foreign Relations Committee, he's been very active in sort of raising alarm in regard to China, raising urgent concerns about the vulnerability of the undersea cable infrastructure that goes to Taiwan. I'm citing the need for stronger U.S. leadership to protect this critical economic and security lifelines from the sort of malicious activities of the People's Republic of China, for particularly sabotaging these cables. And these are really, really important, as well as our relationship with Taiwan and our help and defense of Taiwan. And he's been also talking about this, he's got a resolution, a joint bipartisan resolution affirming concern over the growing threat that China poses to America's national security and economic prosperity. And that particular resolution calls for continued and steady focus on strengthening deterrence in the Indo-Pacific, protecting American workers and businesses from unfair economic practices, maintaining leadership in artificial intelligence and other emerging technologies, and supporting allies and partners, and of course preserving peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait. He also has a piece of legislation that he co-sponsored that would improve education transparency by ensuring that reported graduation rates accurately reflect the success of community colleges, which is of course important to the often having the balance work, family, and school. Many of Utah's community and technical college students' success frequently isn't counted in current graduation metrics, and he's ensuring that this gets counted. He also recently wrote a letter to the Secretary of Energy encouraging full and fair consideration of the proposals submitted by the Utah Geological Survey and Rotherm Energy Corporation to evaluate the geothermal resource potential of deep sedimentary basins along the Wasatch, Northern Wasatch Front Corridor. So we've got a lot of geothermal in the state, and we're trying to ensure that we're able to utilize that. And I guess lastly, he introduced this a while ago, the Fiscal Commission Act. As you know, we are almost $39 trillion in debt in this country, which is approximately 124% of the entire economy. Both parties are to blame. Fiscal policies enacted by both Democrats and Republicans have led to this annual soaring budget deficits, which totaled $1.7 trillion in 2025 alone. And it's projected that the federal government will spend more than $1 trillion on interest on the debt alone in 2026, making a larger expenditure than Medicare or national defense, and second really only to Social Security. So he introduced the Fiscal Commission Act, which is a bipartisan group of his colleagues. He did that with a bipartisan group of his colleagues. The legislation would create a bicameral fiscal commission to find legislative solutions to stabilize spending and decrease the national debt. And it would require Congress to vote on the recommendations of this commission. So we have long needed to get a handle on our national debt and on our budgeting process, and he's working hard to try to convince his colleagues to do just that. And I think that's all I've got, pending any questions.
All right. Does anyone have any questions of either of these gentlemen? All right. Thank you so much for being on our call and at our meeting, and also apologize again for you sitting there for a little bit, but your updates were extremely, extremely helpful and beneficial, and I personally learned a lot.
I think we'll have Rex and Evan next time. They both had family commitments out of state. So
sounds good.
Out of the area at least.
All right. Anything else? Okay. All right. I see we have Keddie Jake on the phone representing the tribes. I don't know if you'd like to introduce yourself, and then Kevin Smedley as well on the line. Calling at the phone, isn't that funny? Would either of you like to introduce yourselves? Hi.
Yeah, I'll just take a quick second. I'm Keddie Jake. I'm the Environmental Program Coordinator at the Paiute Indian Tribe of Utah, and I appreciate the invite.
And I'm Kevin Smedley with Five County Association of Governments. Me and our group, Mike and Roger, work with the small communities in helping them with their various needs.
All right. Thank you. Thank you both for being on the phone. Guys, tell them to stop saying phone. Being on the meeting. There we go. All right. Moving. You're on the phone. I know you're on your computers. But we have Chris Hall here for our next item. It's the UDOT Long Range Plan Overview.
Yes, I just want to take a minute. We had a meeting last week in Cedar City that was more of that long-range plan coordination, and I wasn't able to be there, so I apologize. I'm not sure who of you were there, but I'm assuming that it went well. I got an update that we got some good feedback, so that was really processed in this long-range plan update. So I just want to go a quick overview. It's something that we do every 4 years, and because Iron County is still classified as a rural area, UDOT takes the lead on planning the major transportation projects in the area. So this current update, so we're working on it now, is going to be published in 2027, so next year. But we're in the process now that we're really utilizing that travel demand model that the past several years we've been working on. Nate's been really great about working with our modeler in Salt Lake to help develop that and refine it to make it the tool it is now, so that we can get more accurate information about where the growth is, where the projected traffic's going to be, so we're never caught going, oh, we didn't realize that this road was going to have so much traffic on it. That being said, it's a model. They're not always perfect, but it gives us a good idea of that. So that last meeting was to talk about some of those, where you guys see the needs for those are. So we're generating the needs from that model, and they should have presented some of those in that meeting, saying this is where we think the projects are going to be needed, and plan that out. So we will work together to finalize that in future meetings and come back for more iterations and make sure that everybody in Iron County, the RPO area, says, yes, we agree with some of these projects that we're putting forth. And the big push this time around is that Iron County, Cedar City area, is really close to becoming an MPO status of more than 50,000 people. So then UDOT will no longer be the lead person on the transportation planning. It will shift to that Metropolitan Planning Organization, and you'll have your own plan that is kind of managed by this body, saying we're going to control that plan. So there's a big effort that Nate and I have been working on to make sure that the RPO's long-range transportation plan, which is currently kind of separate than UDOT's rural long-range plan, is aligning almost exactly, so that transition to when you become an MPO, not this update, but the next one, it will probably be you guys running that update completely by yourself. So it's kind of a transition. I'm saying we need to make sure these match up so that when you guys take that over and become kind of the lead of the transportation planning, and UDOT will still be involved and help with that, but it'll kind of shift roles in this. And so we want to make sure that we're coordinating very well this time around, so that transition is as easy as possible over the next 5-6 years. Okay. Nate, did I miss anything in that?
No, we had really good attendance.
I was going to say, raise your hand if you were there, and let's blow Chris away. Turn around and look. Almost everybody here was there.
I'm the one that wasn't.
I will say that that was very helpful for me to kind of see what was there, just, you know, not being in the seat very long, but also to be able to kind of look at what our projections are and kind of making some shifts and adjustments to that. That was helpful on those maps. I thought that was great. So, yeah, thanks for putting that together.
And it's really important to note that those projections are using the county control totals from the Kemsey Gardner, kind of that statewide data. And there's always been a lot of complaints in fast-growing counties that those numbers are smaller than what they're expecting. And so that's why we do some of these one-off studies that we've been doing in the county, like in Parowan and kind of the North Interchange area in Enix, saying how are we going to improve that connection, because we can massage those models to say we're going to put more growth in these areas so we can see what it's like if it goes faster than what the county control totals are. So that's another tool. So sometimes we look at that, and I think a lot of people go, well, that's wrong because we're going faster than that. But that's what is kind of the requirement that we have to plan to, so that way the planning for transportation is equivalent across the whole state. But we can also take and do studies to say, let's look at this. If this grows faster than we expect, you know, what kind of impacts are we going to see, so we can be prepared in case we need to move projects up, so we kind of know those impacts as worst-case scenarios if it grows faster than what the county, the Kemsey Gardner numbers are, which oftentimes it is. I think in the last couple of years, Iron County did grow a little bit more than what they projected. So it's good to be able to do those studies to have that information to kind of say worst case scenario.
The only thing I saw at that meeting that Not that it's concerning. There was absolutely positively no representation for the west side of the county. We didn't have any input from Burrell, Newcastle. In fact, we asked a few. You know, they got asked if anybody knew anything out there, and nobody knew nothing. So, I mean, for the county, for the gut of the I-15 corridor, I think we're doing good. But we've got a lot of growth out there, too. Isn't that your road, too?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, and that is, we struggle a little bit because we oftentimes don't have the contact information. So we send an invite to those small communities to what we have. And I don't know if it gets to the right place. So that's something that we could definitely improve on, is making sure those invites get to the right people in time to attend.
Except it won't be his problem after a while. It'll be our problem.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. It's when you live in a small town like I do, when you're overshadowed, and like because they're not attending or not showing up, or we're not getting a hold of them, they're going to be, woe is me, you know. And here we are making sure this is going good, and then it gets turned over to us, to this board, not us personally. Yeah. What's going to happen out there if we don't start getting more input for out there also? Because it is a county thing, not just a I-15 corridor thing.
I recently updated a contact list. I already know I missed some people because Commissioner Robinson wasn't on that. But maybe what I'll do is I'll distribute that to all of you, and I'll start inviting them to attend these meetings as well, if you're okay with that.
Mm-hmm. I think we ought to have some input from out there.
I agree, because the more input we have, the better decisions we can make. And I think that's a lot of, I see it a lot because I work with a lot of rural counties, and I've reached out to some of them and said, we want you to attend this, and they're like, it's not worth our time.
Who do you invite? There's no cities. There's no incorporated townships out there. You just invite representatives, fire chiefs.
Burrell Fire Department goes on a lot of wrecks, a lot of car fires, a lot of rollovers.
And that's probably what
they've had a lot of.
Fire chiefs are like this close to retirement.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We've got to get more.
Maybe that's what we missed. Them.
We've got to get something out there, in my opinion.
Incorporated towns and stuff.
Wayne and Burn are both.
Town clerk or anything like that. We try and reach out to them. But yeah, if they're unincorporated county, we invite the county and say, we hope that you provide that information.
Well, I guess my point is, technically the county commission is representing them as the municipality. But
yes.
I see Tyler looking around and not finding any of their. I
haven't seen one of the meetings since.
Sorry, I couldn't remember.
And Katie Jake is someone who Tyler and I spent, met. He was at the table with her, and we invited her to this meeting, and she's out there where she definitely has knowledge and need and is now a part of this group.
Yeah,
now
so she's a part of it because
so thank you for being on the meeting.
Yeah, we just got to find the right people that are actually going to be involved and care. And younger,
it's
maybe,
hard
Dan.
Work. Because they often change with retirement stuff, and so it's a big job to keep up with all that contact information. So yes, any help we can get there, because we would love more input. The more input we have, the better plan we have. So
if you know people in those areas, ask them who would be good to invite, because we all know people, and we might be able to get the right people here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only thing I saw that I didn't, not that I didn't agree with it, just like, I know that when you don't have people from the community show up, as AKA Canara did for years and years and years, we never knew what was going on because nobody would show up and take the time to come to these meetings. And I think that's what we'll run into out there. And it'll become our problem, or this board's problem,
and
not
you said
ours.
5 to 8 years?
The NPO status will take effect in the census year. And so the next census year is 2030. So we're 4 years out from that. And then it usually takes a year or so to get the census results back and get the NPO implemented. So, yeah, it's probably going to be around that 5 or 6 years. Okay. It'll be the NPO should be established.
Chris, can you
we'll all be out.
The NPO boundaries, because there's some debate whether, like, Perrin would even be included, whether or not Canara would be included in the NPO.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good question. Usually they draw kind of those urban boundaries of where that population center is. So there's a large probability that the NPO boundary would be just Cedar and Enoch.
Cedar and Enoch.
Because Parowan and Canaryville are probably a little bit too far away to be wrapped up in those boundaries. That being said, I think there's a lot of value in keeping similar boundaries that the current RPO is, because mm-hmm. I think we need the input from Brian Head and Canaryville and Parowan really to make sure that the as the growth occurs in the area that it's cohesive. And so there may be ways to incorporate, say, the actual MPO areas this side, but the planning areas, because there were expected some, like the urbanization or more growth in those areas will be happening in the next so many years. So I think once that process gets started, there's more conversations about it, but I think there's, and I don't know all the specific requirements of what has to be designated as MPO boundaries and what we can and can't include. So I think that will be worked on, and hopefully there'll be some more information as the process moves along to say what can we do to incorporate more of the area in that MPO planning process.
Great.
So we have asked the UDOT Emerging Areas team to put together a lot of information of what that means and what all of this means and what are the advantages and disadvantages and all that stuff. So hopefully in the next year they will have gathered a lot of that and can give you all of the information you need.
We're trying to get a checklist to make that process that once the census is reported and you're considered an urban area, that the transition to the MPO will go faster, because we have kind of a checklist beforehand to say, here's all the things we need to do, so we kind of have it taken care of up front so the process goes faster, so there's no surprises. So that's what Nate and I have been working on with our emerging area in Salt Lake State. This would be really valuable to get this done up front, so we have a checklist of these are things that we need to accomplish before that transition.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So. Right. So. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Chris. Are you also UDOT updates?
I'm going to do the update.
Just stay right there.
I think most of the update is that there's going to be lots of construction across Iron Canyon this summer. we have pavement preservation projects on SR State Route 14, 143, 56. We have multiple I-15 projects, so there's lots. SR-130 north of Enoch, we've got some pavement preservation going on there from between Enoch and Minersville. So lots and lots of construction. Everywhere you go, you'll be running into barrels. So please be patient and make sure you be careful so you don't cause any crashes in that accident or work zone areas. And other than that, this southbound I-15 passing lane, so basically from the New Harmony exit to the top of the Black Ridge, is about 90% complete. It will be 90% complete this month, so it should be advertising, and there's a possibility the construction might start on this year and maybe next year, depending on kind of the aspects of what impacts we might see with the other I-15 projects. The South Cedar Interchange, I think, is nearing the 60% completion as far as that design, and I think those are the major updates unless anybody has any specific questions.
On the third lane, a lot of it looks like it's already done.
On the northbound?
Southbound.
Between where and where?
I mean, from Canaryville up to Cedar, like all of that through there, looks like, well, a lot of it's been asphalt
poured. No. They've got a mile section here and there, but not
all. Yeah, the northbound.
Yeah, the northbound, yes. So that was there, and because it's not fully complete, so we're going to make that consistent, we decided not to stripe that right now until it's all complete, because they'll be too short to really get people enough room to pass. And we were worried it would cause a lot of crashes because people go, oh, I can make it around and then go, and then they expect the lane to go longer and then I'd have to cut back in. So that was kind of an intentional decision, because we were worried about how that would impact traffic and crashes, because we didn't want multiple segments of really short areas. And so this summer we should get it all completed and it'll be striped all at the same time. So
yeah, there's still three spots. They've got to bring up the dirt like 5 or 6 feet before they get to paving the third lane in a few spots. So
we knew that was probably going to be a comment, and like, why there's pavement there, why didn't people use it? And it was just the worry of that, of having multiple in and out. We just didn't want to have that concern with crashes, and so that was the active decision, especially in the winter with plowing and stuff. It would have been a lot of difficulties, not this winter, but
we were worried. What did you plow? There was nothing to plow. What are you talking about?
Yeah. So
there's enough asphalt there that you could do some Kramer lanes for Seinfeld.
Yeah. Just in spots, though. It really.
Yeah, but you could enjoy this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just kidding. Sorry.
So the weather did provide kind of an uptick in these projects, though. I feel like.
Yeah, so I think they're ahead of schedule on I-15-1 because they were able to work a lot more than they thought this winter. So I haven't seen what that has done to their schedule, but hopefully that it should be.
I think they've only lost like 5 days to weather the whole winter, 5 or 6. They have lost. They're way above schedule.
Yeah.
Good job. Thank you. Anything else for Chris? All right. Thank you. We're going to move to updates. We'll start with Mayor Nelson. So you're going to tell us about your local transportation project studies and updates.
I'll defer to Kent. He's way more into the details than me.
Two of you get to defer twice.
I don't know what all I have that's new today, but we are moving along with our federal aid project on 800 West, the extension over to Coal Creek Road. That's in the design and environmental right now. We're trying to get into the right-of-way acquisition part of that as well. Our application we put in through the Joint Highway Committee for the extension of Providence Center down around to tie into South Mountain Drive. That project made it past its next hurdle in the approval process with the Joint Highway Committee's recommendation of that to the Transportation Commission. So that's moving forward. We think that project's going to be, I think at this point, it's kind of a rubber stamp to get it on there. One other thing I would just mention, the Joint Highway Committee, there currently isn't anyone from our region. Really, Southwest Idaho's kind of underrepresented on that commission. The members of that full committee are made up of county representatives and city representatives, and it's kind of half and half between counties and cities. So the League of Cities and Towns is who appoints the city representatives to that. So I'm working with them to try to get myself appointed, and it looks like that's going to happen, to be an official member of that committee and give us more representation from our part of the state on that joint.
Do we need to
write
a letter for you, or do we need, is there anything we can do to help with that?
Well, what they're telling me now is they're like, if you want to do it, we'd love to have you. So I think it's going to happen.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm not too concerned about that. But yeah, I just wanted to make sure that we're better represented with the Joint Highway Committee than what we have been. So, yeah. And I don't think I have anything else to bring up. I think anything
we've got in our budget process, we've got a few other connecting roads that we're trying to get in general. Yeah. I'm trying to get something from Westview over to Cross Hollow.
Yeah. But we thought when we got Mayor Nelson elected that the money would just magically appear, but somehow it hasn't. So.
Well, it's not going out the door as fast. Oh, did I say that? I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I want to strike that from the
I don't care.
At least it's more balanced between different things.
All right, Mayor Rushton.
Well, I don't know. I think that our Highway 91, and Ryan may have to correct me on this, but it's gotten pushed out. Is that right?
What? Yeah, till August.
Yeah.
I think it started yesterday.
Yeah. And
we're not bitter about it.
Yeah, no, we're not mad at all. But and everybody I've told it was going to start or is going to start calling me. But, yeah, I think that their batch, the tests on the asphalt wasn't up to snuff, and so they couldn't go forward. So.
How'd they find a flat spot to make a test?
I don't know. Well, no, it's the batch that they were making. Anyways. And I don't know that there's really anything else.
We've got a couple developments going in that are going to impact potentially going up on to the belt route one day, which will go in, so we're pretty excited to get that underway and get started on that. But I think transportation only sense.
I did find out that there is a property owner that is adjacent to the belt route that is going to be listing their property for sale, so we may want to kind of think about that soon too. So
they're on the radar.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll send you guys all of this stuff so you can apply. The next RTAC meeting is where we'll add stuff to the list.
Okay.
Add stuff to be recommended to this body. So I'll send that to you.
Yeah.
Okay, Mayor Calloway.
we're just excited to get our crosswalks in soon, so looking forward to that. Should have those done by the time it snows.
yes, it snows.
And your shuttle stops, right?
And the shuttle stops with that, yes.
Great. I'll defer to Dan so you don't have to hear my voice on this piece.
Well, I'm going to start with one that's a heroin brain head thing. Brett and I and UDOT have been meeting to try to get the trail system for ATVs and UTVs. There is kind of, there's one, they use it up the mountain, but I guess the, what's the acronym, Chris? The TCO, the THO, whatever that is, it only extends so far down the canyon. So we're trying to get a good designated trail all the way up and around in Brianhead. Brett's, of course, working on that piece. We're working on how that's going to tie into Parowan down there. And also we're working on a separate active transportation trail. Won't talk about the bridge, but that's ready. It's moving forward. But the orange barrels that everybody sees everywhere we're doing a sidewalk project there on 200 South, Holyoke Lane, the main road going in. That is a UDOT grant. City's doing a bunch of in-kind work, and then Sunrock's going to come in and do the pavement and sidewalk and all of that stuff, so those neighborhoods can, the kids can walk into town without having to walk on the highway. That's what the construction you see now. And Brett just asked me what's going on out on the interchange. That's actually the Maverick. They were required to modify the interchange, and they ran out of time when they could get asphalt in the fall, so UDOT allowed them to defer the southbound off-ramp to now, and that's what they're doing right now. So those are the transportation things we got.
We got our widening piece with Maverick happening. That's kind of a thing. If you get off at Parowan, you'll see it. Know if you wanted to mention that, because it's a bit of a scene today.
Is that what you just said?
What I was just talking about. Wait, she didn't.
Okay, somebody was like, "What is that? What are you doing now?" Like,
yeah, they're finally doing the southbound off ramp there.
Okay, so. Thank you. Sorry.
You're good.
All right, you're all red.
Nada. We got nothing going on.
Happily, nothing going on.
George, do I got anything going on? Oh, I got George working on a road that's in the unincorporated part in our valley, but. That's all we're doing. He's trying to make it to where it's fire preventable and make it, well, with the roundabout being put in, our emergency services are going to have a hard time getting off exit 51 depending on the day. We have a gate down on the 15 right below Canera so you can access us quick. So we've been trying to get the roads fixed so we have EMS
when you guys
quicker.
Close that, when you do the closures on that overpass there, if we had a fire or we had
a heart attack,
emergency, it would require them to go all the way around through New Harmony. So now we've got it set up where we go through the fence line there on the access road, and fire's got a key. So,
and the contractor should coordinate with you in case something like that happens. They should react pretty quickly to open that for you for that access.
Well,
so
that's if
they haven't
coordinated
with you, reach out to them and say, we need to coordinate a plan, so if we do have an emergency, we have this closure, how are we going to get through? So they should be required to make a plan with fire or whatever's going on, emergencies, so that all you have to do is make one call, say we're coming, and they should clear that one for you.
Well, and that would work if it was during working hours, but if it's 2 in the morning, that becomes a little bit problematic, and we've got a pretty good solution now with Mayor Allred and with Canaraville.
Yeah, that gate may work better, but that is something we do require our contractors to make any plans, any emergency services. They should have reached out and said, with this closure, how are we going to handle that? But sometimes they don't do as good as they should. So
yeah, it's been me and George correlating with Gold Cross, Cedar Fire, and everybody else trying to make sure. We all know what we're doing.
And that access road there, for part of it, was not going to be able to be traveled by large fire trucks or anything. And so I got Bruce Anderson to go out and grade that and fix it so that, and widen it so that we could get fire in there.
That's all we got.
All right. Okay, is there any other discussion items for the RTEC agenda? Our next meeting will be July 1st, 2026. We'll have the pleasure of going to Brianhead. excited to see.
We'll look at the new
always
sidewalks.
Excited, yeah.
No, crosswalks.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have them done by then, yeah.
Will you have your new cladding on your city office?
No.
Okay, that won't happen yet.
No.
Well, that sounds great. So we're looking forward to that. So I need a motion to adjourn this meeting.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
And that motion is adjourned. So now we'll call the order.